Come on in.
Get real close, because you're listening to Snap Judgment, the podcast. We've got stories you are not going to believe. Get ready.
All right.
Welcome to Snap Judgment from NPR and PRX. My name is Glenn Washington, and I very much need to tell you a story. But you got to understand, I can't tell you where this story came from. I had to change some names and some dates, but make no mistake, this happened. And here's how it went down. See, there's this little nerd guy, mild-mannered, small, meek, quiet, living a quiet life in his own little tiny quiet house. He's got a cat, and he's got a sister. And the sister gets a new boyfriend, and then suddenly, the sister's got a black eye. And the brother's like, hey, what's going on? What's happening? And she's like, nothing. I just ran into a door. It's funny because she doesn't have a history of running into doors. Then she shows up with another black eye. And the little guy is like, darn it, I'm going to go have a talk with his boyfriend. He gets his dander up and knocks on the boyfriend's door. Hey, I want you to leave my sister alone.
You better get up out of here, nerd boy.
I said you better leave my sister alone. Get up out of here, lest you get some of what she got. Well, nerd boy went home. He's mad. Turns out, boyfriend picked the wrong family to mess with. See, nerd boy pops open a can of Diet Coke, fires up his computer, and then the magic happens. With just a few keystrokes, he invents a criminal record for the boyfriend. And he laughed. He laughed his high, tinny nerd laugh. He stuck 3 DUIs and a couple of assault charges on the guy, just like he was moving around Word documents. Then, Nerdling calls the police.
Hey, I ain't seen a guy driving drunk on the I-80. I think maybe he's going to kill somebody.
The cops pull boyfriend over, check the computer, see he ain't even supposed to be behind the wheel, and haul him off to the slammer.
Wait, y'all looking for somebody else? I don't got no DUIs.
Well, man, the machine says you do. Boyfriend gets out, but then, mysteriously, his house is in foreclosure. The phone is cut off. No ESPN, because the cable don't work. And boyfriend, he's at his wit's end. He's wet and hungry, needs a little cash. When the ATM sucks up his last credit card, right when the police pull up and take him to jail again, they tell him he's got one phone call. So he calls his girlfriend.
I don't know what's happening.
He's bleeding like a little lamb. Nerd boy tells his sister to pass him the phone.
I told you.
Today, Snap Judgment proudly presents Hacked. When we ask a simple question. Have we given these machines and the people that control them too much power? What it is a class, a tribe, a cabal of people different than you and I, and they alone have the keys to the kingdom. While the rest of us are steady getting played. Do you know how it works with these satellite, microwave, silicone, terabyte, inverted, sloppy joe? I don't know. They know, and they know it, and they know it, and it says in the movies that with great knowledge comes great responsibility. Clifford Stoll manage computers at Lawrence Berkeley Labs when he began to catch a whiff. Something strange. Something going on. Something odd. Wacky. Well.
Go back 25 years. It's now 1985 or 1986. It's a time long ago when almost nobody had a pocket pager. 2400 baud modems were a rarity. Hardly anybody had ever heard of the ARPANET, the origins of the internet. And I'm working as an astronomer right over at Lawrence Berkeley Labs over in Berkeley. Somehow or another, I end up managing a bunch of Unix computers. And we're trying to bill various physicists and astronomers, and we're trying to charge them money for the time they use on our machines. And one day our accounts are off by 75 cents. I mean, I can imagine our accounts being off by a millionth of a penny. But 75 cents, that's interesting. So I started looking at it, checking out. It turns out maybe somebody was using our system without permission. Somebody's probably hacked into my computer. They'd have to be a super user. It's the person in charge of the machine. In Unix land, this means they can add programs, they can add users, and they can erase all our files. They can make a mess. So I'm sitting there scratching my head saying, this is weird. I mean, Lawrence Berkeley Laboratories is, we're doing physics and astronomy, and why would somebody want to use our computers? I want to hold this guy in my hand. I don't want to just sit back and say, oh boy, this is bad stuff. I want to know what's going on. I head back to the lab and say, how can I actually trace this down? I know, I'll print out what's going on. I'll get some printers. We had 40 lines a hacker might be coming in on. Each printer would connect to one line. And the first printer I can get from my office, second printer from our neighbors. But you run out of friends after three or four. So one of the few things I learned in graduate school was it's easier to apologize later than to get permission in advance. So I waited around till everybody's gone from the lab, and I just went around liberating people's desktop PCs and printers and hooked them up so that anytime somebody would log into our system, boop, 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 I'd get a printout of it. And I unrolled a sleeping bag, got a thermos of vegetarian minestrone soup, and sort of set out to find out what's going on. Next morning, wake up and look around, and over there in one of those teletypes, there's 20 or 30 feet of paper coming out of it, showing how somebody has snuck into my computer, used an account, found a hole in our operating system. I'm looking at this printout, and I can see he's looking at the Army Redstone missile base someplace or another, searching out information on rocket launches. Somebody who's a spy coming in through my computer. This is weird. So we have a departmental meeting and everybody's there, you know, the director of the lab and all this. I mean, guy with a suit and a tie and a beard, all this, you know, these important people. They say, this is important stuff. Somebody's screwing around our system. Take all the equipment, all the time you need. Take 3 weeks if you have to, but nail the guy. So I did what anybody else would do. I called the FBI. Help, help, somebody, break into my computer, they're fooling around, they're, the guy at the FBI says, oh my God, that's serious stuff, where are they coming from? So I say, oh my God, they're coming from someplace east, and the guy at the FBI stops me right there, he says, how much money have you lost? I said, well, we've lost about 75 cents. And the special agent says, you know, it's not worth our time talking to you for 75 cents. Call back when you've lost $500,000. Over the next 6 months, we ended up talking to all sorts of three-letter agencies. The FBI, the CIA, the NSA, BBC, BB King, Doris Day, anybody that we could think of. And inevitably, what we found out was that nobody was willing to lift a finger to help. The weird thing was, I went into it as an apolitical West Coast hippie who felt, oh yeah, I'm doing research. It has very little to do with what's going on in the big world. Halfway into it, I realized they're attacking a country that, to my astonishment, my beliefs were deeply rooted in. I take extraordinarily deep offense at somebody spying against my nation. I'm becoming a partisan. And if one organization or one group won't help out, maybe somebody else will. But I'm going to see this through. We track things down as if we're following a string. Oh, a telephone connection across Berkeley into Oakland. A long-distance connection from Oakland into Northern Virginia. A satellite connection from there back to Hanover, Germany. And there the problem was, in order to make a telephone trace, somebody didn't just type on a computer, but you had to have somebody drive down to the central telephone exchange with a voltmeter, an ohmmeter, and a signal tracer to figure out what connection went from over here to over there. And so in order to make a phone trace in Hanover, Germany, we had to keep this hacker connected for 2 or 3 hours while people in Germany got out of bed and raced downtown and started tracing these wires. So suddenly it occurred to me the thing to do is to put enough information that this guy would be interested in so that he would sneak into my computer, start nibbling this, start reading this, and be so interested that he wouldn't leave. So I invented all sorts of completely bogus, fraudulent things about military connections and secret networks and gobbledygook that looked military and spy attractive, and put it all in our computer. It was like a honeypot to attract flies. 2 weeks later, guy comes in, looks around, and oh, look at that. He starts downloading it and just spending hours just downloading. Meanwhile, we call up these various agencies and figure out who's there and think. Find out who it is. Eventually, out comes the result, which was these hackers in West Germany figured that they could make money out of computers by stealing military information and selling the information, the passwords, and the network identifiers to the Stasi and the Soviet KGB. Well, I went over there and testified at court, and three of them ended up pleading out or something like this and getting 2-year suspended sentences. Suspended mainly because the Berlin Wall collapsed during this time. Seeing him in person was sad. By then, I knew what brand cigarettes he smoked. I knew what times he was awake. I knew where he lived. I knew who his friends were. It wasn't a gleeful, ha-ha, I caught you, but rather a sad, look, there's so much positive that you can do with a computer. There's so many cool things that you can create, that you can build, rather than stealing people's information and then trying to retail it to somebody on the other side of the Iron Curtain. It was the end of innocence online. It was when almost nobody had a pocket pager, when 2400 baud modems were a rarity, when no one had heard of the ARPANET.
Clifford Stoll published a book on the story you just heard called The Cuckoo's Egg, Tracking a Spy Through the Maze of Computer Espionage. We'll have a link on our site. Understand, maybe you've never taken down an international computer crime syndicate, but I bet you've got a story that you need to share regardless. Maybe a deep, dark secret, a personal confession. You go right ahead. Let the world know your hidden sins and deepest desires. On the Snap Judgment story sharing website, we just might put all your personal business on our national radio show. Snapjudgment.org. Picture your show's links. Vote on listener stories and feel free, of course, to leave your own. You're listening to Snap Judgment. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Snap Judgment from NPR and PRX. Now, one of the scariest things about hackers, that's our show today, hackers. One of the scariest things about hackers is that you never know who you're dealing with. It could be anybody typing on those keys, your neighbor, the priest, the warden. even an 11-year-old girl. This next piece comes from our very own resident snap judgment hacker, Stephanie Fu.
My parents were never so unhappy as when they were married. The war games they played were so perversely suburban that we were straight out of a John Waters movie. It would begin with sanctions, as my father removed our existence from his radar by watching Home Improvement. My mother, starved for attention, would get it by literally hurling missiles of sriracha hot sauce at his head.
Uh-oh.
This was not as disconcerting to my father as it was to me. And so it would always be my job to pick up the pieces and clean up the chili. It was tough being the glue that held our family together, especially since I was just 11 years old. But there was nothing else I could do, so I dealt with it. And where my parents failed in parenting, America Online took up the reins. Chat rooms and message boards became home. It was a world I could control. I could block toxic friends, close windows I didn't like. Screams are a lot easier to deal with when they're just capital letters. But one night, just as I was listening to my modem sing, I saw a color page in our printer. I pulled it out, and there, on an impossibly lovely beach, was a woman. She had tousled brunette hair full of sand and salt, toasted brown skin, and a landing strip. Homegirl was naked. Who in our house was printing out naked ladies? Okay, it wasn't me, and it was probably not my mom. Maybe someone had broken into our house to use our inkjet printer? Anything, anybody. But it was obvious. My father. Why would a married man ever do such a thing? It was all so clear now. If my husband was looking at naked pictures, I'd be a psycho too. She wasn't screaming at him for chewing with his mouth open. No, she was screaming at him about this. The poor woman. She could never see this picture. My mother never looked sexy on the beach. She always got wedgies, and she peeled. How typical for my dad to be immature and careless enough to leave the dirty work to me. Now, it was my job to shred and hide this disgusting printout, my job to delete the history. And now, it would be my job to come down here every night and check the printer. And I wasn't going to do it. I was going to end this now. So I made myself the administrator on AOL, and I placed the 12-year-old boy parental control settings on my father. The next night, my parents came to me and asked why my father couldn't sign on to his bank account.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. I shrugged and I said, I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? Did you delete our bank account? Is all of our money gone? Are we broke now? How do we know? Give us your password. We have to go in and fix it.
But I had resolved, no. I never stood up to my parents, never. And it was about time I did. I was in the driver's seat now, and you know, it was better this way. Trifling fools. I'd save this marriage whether they liked it or not. I wasn't giving up that password.
At first, they asked nicely. That was only for a minute. They told me I was grounded, told me that when I got it back, I'd never be able to use the internet again, that I couldn't watch TV, talk on the phone, see my friends. They stomped their feet and threw up their hands, but I had tasted from the tree of knowledge and there was nothing they could do. I'd won. Suddenly, my mother's face grew calm. She walked across the room and picked up her tennis racket. I was able to jump away at the last minute, but instead of my head, she hit the chandelier. Pieces of it rained down on us. And she walked towards me, glass crunching under her feet. She said, very quietly, "What's the password?" No matter how weak and incompetent they were, my parents were real. My house was real. The tennis racket was real. My AOL Eden was not.
And so I gave away the key. I told her the password. We are so happy. 2001.
Snap Judgment Uber producer Mark Risich is really good with computers.
Ain't that right, Mark? Mark.
Now, he is. He's really good with computers. Great with them. But leaving well enough alone? Mark's not so good at that.
So before I did Snap Judgment, I was working in Silicon Valley as a programmer for a big antivirus security firm. And it was the front lines of the computer world, and we were protecting people from script kiddies and crackers. And all the conference rooms were named after famous computer viruses like Melissa, Slammer, Nimda, Sasser. And it was funny, it was like a tribute to the enemy. You know, every time a new virus would hit, the company's stock would go up. And we had a lab, you know, full of PhDs, MIT people, and they were coming up with solutions, heuristics, before the enemies would come up with the exploit. And they were white hat geniuses.
But that wasn't me. You know, I was the self-taught political science major that they let do e-commerce. And, you know, basically I was lucky to have a job after the dot-com bubble exploded. You know, people would call me in the middle of the night from India and Australia because, you know, they gave me the crappy countries on the other side of the world because they didn't want to do them. So even though I had all that, I was happy. Because before I worked in computers, I worked in politics for the Michigan House of Representatives. And so I was there with the legislators and the lobbyists and the activists. And I handed out coloring books and state maps. You know, if you needed your lights turned back on, I could do that. Unemployment run out, I could make a call to DSS. You needed a guy to sell Dukakis buttons at the state convention, that was me. You know, fight the good fight, do what's right. But it got old. I didn't want to go to law school, and I didn't want to shake the hand of every taxpayer on the 4th of July. I wasn't going to be a wonk, and I wasn't going to get elected. But I figured I could do one thing. Computers. I'd always been good at computers. And so I applied for a job in MIS. That's what they used to call IT. I told him about my programming experience with the Commodore VIC-20 when I was 13. I made a Space Invaders program. And how I used to work for EDS at the age of 17 on the wireframe system. And that was it. And so they listened. And they, you know, they had to because the state representative was the one who got me the interview and they weren't going to diss him. But in the long run, they dissed me. So I knew it was time to go, but I didn't want to go out with just a whimper. You know, you call it pride, but you can't really call it professional pride because what I did was not really very professional. I decided to hack the House, the Michigan House of Representatives. Now, the only thing was, well, number one, it's Big Brother. But the other thing is, I like these people. I mean, say what you want about, like, big government and bureaucracy. These people worked overtime all the time for what they thought was right. And they worked for the people. The only ones I really didn't like were the staff sergeants, the security guards for the House. It was a total caste system. They say hello to the reps, the lobbyists, but they didn't really say hello to the staffers. The lower you went, the less they acknowledged you. That bugged me.
So in my final week, I scope out the system. I'd been scoping out the system a while, and we were running Windows 3.1.1 on 386s on a Novell file system. But there was a hole. You see, all the programs, they ran from this group menu. And you'd click on an icon, and the icon would run a batch file. And the batch file would then run your program. Now, the batch file was protected. But not on the network level. You see, all I needed was a DOS prompt and a simple attrib minus R, and I could edit any batch file. That file could then execute anything I wanted as that user.
So once you have access, then you have to make that decision. Am I a white hat or am I a black hat? Am I a good witch or am I a bad witch? If you're a black hat, you just make your changes, and to hell with them. whatever happens, happens. If I want to delete all the representative's documents, I could do that. So it's my last day, and I'm setting my hack in place. And just then, in walks Kathy from the help desk. Now, she's always been really nice. She's been supportive. She, you know, encouraged me to apply for the job. She always looked at the macros, the WordPerfect 5.1 macros that I would write for everybody in the office. And she sees me with this DOS window open. She looks a little funny, but she knows I like computers. And she just says hello to me and Nancy, my office mate, and she walks out. And for a minute, I felt bad, but I can't resist. So 2 weeks later, I'm in New York City, far away. And the curiosity is killing me. And so I call Nancy, you know, my old office mate. And the news is good. Really, not just good, really good. Like Rube Goldberg good. And she goes, people are looking for you. I'm like, who? She says, I don't know, the sergeants? Oh, yeah? Yeah, and some Lions fans? Oh, yeah? So anyway, the hack was this. I modified the time entry program because at the end of every month, the secretaries would enter the time for the representative in the time entry program. And I knew by that time, I would be gone. So in it, I added a line to broadcast a message to every single computer on the network. And it said this. Call now, extension 4612, to get free season tickets to the Detroit Lions. It said it just like that. Call now, extension 4612, to get free season tickets to the Detroit Lions. Extension 4612 was the staff sergeant's desk. Everyone wanted tickets to the Lions. Because who was the running back? Barry Sanders. Elusive number 20, Barry Sanders. Perhaps the best running back of all time, Barry Sanders. And what was the pièce de résistance? The final stroke of luck, the thing I didn't plan, but made it a great hack, is that the person who clicked on the icon was from Pontiac, and the Detroit Lions played in Pontiac, and everybody bought it. The legislators, the staffers, they were calling up. They wanted the free season tickets to the Detroit Lions to see Barry Sanders. You may laugh and say the Detroit Lions were nothing, but he was the greatest ever that was, and you would have called too. Well, Kathy came running down to my office looking for me, but like number 20, I was long gone.
For Herman Moore. Barry on the misdirection play makes Bankston miss, and there he goes! Sanders! Touchdown!
Boing, boom, chuck. Boing, boom, chuck. Boing, boom, chuck. Boing, ping, boom, chuck. Ping, boing, ping, boom, chuck. Ping, boing, ping, boom, chuck. Ping.
Boing, ping, boom, chuck. Ping. Now understand, the statute of limitations has run out on the crime. He's home free. Do not come here looking to lock up my Uber producer. But if you do want to find them, you might want to hit us on the Facebook or the Twitter, the social media. Go on ahead that way. You're listening to Snap Judgment. We'll be right back after this break. Hey, Snappers. This is Glenn Washington, and we're going to take a small business break. No. I'm not asking for your money. Keep your wallet in your pocket. I don't want a dime yet. Today, I just have a little bit of a favor to ask. If you like this show, hit us up a review on iTunes. Kick it out on your Facebook page, Twitter. That's the best way to be a friend to the Snap. Peace and soul. Okay, we're hacked into the middle of a very, very special Snap Judgment episode. My name is Glenn Washington, and today we're becoming one with the machine. Actually, no. These devices, these computers, they're tools not for connecting with robots. Nah.
We want to connect with living, breathing persons. Is that what we want? Just what we want. Just a little bit of tenderness. All these wires and cables and stuff. That's just a means of hacking into someone's heart.
Wouldn't it be great if you met someone who could see you, appreciate you, and love you for who you really are?
The kind of person you're made to be with.
The online dating site that lets you date your way.
We use an in-depth
personality test today and discover
experience the passion and joy of true love.
He loves everything about me.
I love laughing with her.
Jeremy is, he's amazing.
Lauren and I's romance is just like a volcano of love.
Hi, it's Rebecca. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
This is Sally. She doesn't want me to use her real name.
I don't want to give a lot of details where someone would be able to be recognized or something.
So, Sally. Sally put a profile up on an online dating website.
And I met three different guys on it. The first two, there wasn't really a good connection. And then the third person, there was some connection there between the two of us.
She took a liking to me, I took a liking to her.
This is the guy. His name is Sam. Now the thing is, Sally's been burned before.
She had this experience of having been with somebody and found out that they were married, you know, so she just wanted to be sure that I was single, and I said, yeah, I'm single.
Over the course of two months, we were getting closer, you know. We definitely spent the night a lot.
You know, I really wasn't super into her, but she was nice. And I like the company.
This is how Sam looks at the same situation.
While I was dating her, I'm thinking, if I'm not finding what it is I want, I'm going to continue to explore dating other people until I find somebody that I really have a nice connection with.
But she told you that she had this history of getting two-timed by somebody, and then you're dating other people without her knowing.
You know, she asked me if I was single.
So?
So in my mind, I define single as, you know, I'm free to date other people, you're free to date other people, and if we want to have a conversation about being exclusive, we can have that.
And you didn't have that with her?
No, we never had that. No.
I thought I was the only one who had seen.
Sally had no idea how Sam actually felt about her.
I thought we were moving forward with something, with a relationship, and we spent a lot of time together.
And this part, this is where I come in. I've just gotten dumped, so I'm testing the internet dating waters. And I had a profile up on the same dating website, had gotten a message from Sam, and had written him back.
I thought you were very cute. I actually was kind of excited to hear back from you and actually go out with you.
And then out of the blue, I get a message from someone. Someone with a username of Got Your Back. And Got Your Back tells me, stay away from Sam, unless you want to be one of many. Now, I recognize in Got Your Back, although I don't know anything about this person, I recognize something familiar. I know it's a woman who's been wronged in some way. She's just like me. I wrote back to Sam and told him, dude, I'm not going to meet you.
All of a sudden, you weren't interested anymore because you got some anonymous warning from somebody about me. And I'm like, what? I was shocked. I wasn't sure what had happened.
It's a mystery. Who the hell has got your back?
He asked to use my computer. He was checking on Craigslist. He was trying to buy something from someone. So I let him use my laptop, and I didn't think anything about it.
I checked my email.
I was in the shower.
Saw I had a message from the dating site. So I logged in and checked my messages.
So he wrote back to me and asked me out. Then he
closed the browser, logged off.
This is how I imagine it. Sally comes out of the bathroom, bathrobe on, towel wrapped around her head. Sam's lying in bed with her laptop in his lap. She leans in, kisses him. They kiss for a good long while. She's got her eyes closed, all into it.
Girl, you're sending me these sexual energies, and I gotta grab it right now. I've gotta have it.
He opens one eye, presses Apple Q, and the message he was reading, the message from me, disappears. He goes back to kissing her. He watches her get dressed, and she goes to work.
When I got home later that night, I was on the computer, and I hadn't been logging back onto the dating site since I had met him, and the site was there, and it had his login information in it. I went, saw the history, clicked on one of the links on there, and it opened up everything.
So I emailed that site's help desk. There was no way that she could have broken into my account, you know, without having access to it already.
I was able to go into his account. I couldn't help myself. I just started reading the messages that he was sending to other people and that they were sending to him. And I was just completely astounded. Because he was really, really good at playing like I was the only one he was seeing. And I was not the only one he was seeing.
She had actually, you know, gone into my account and was reading my messages.
I was livid. He was playing me and all these other women. And I said, okay, over. Game over. No way. And so that's how I found the messages that you and he had sent back and forth.
She was attacking me, but what was frustrating to me was that she attacked you, and that she were to attempt to try and ruin a potential connection. Yeah, I felt violated.
To my surprise, even though I knew the entire story, he still put the moves on me.
Look, you know, maybe if anything, maybe this is even more of a reason for us to meet, because what the heck is all this, you know?
What Sam doesn't get, what he couldn't possibly know, is that even though Sally did something, well, crazy, I'm completely on her side. She acted on those angry, vengeful impulses that I squelch. And in doing that, she had my back.
I don't know your name, but I would... Thank you, got your back.
You're welcome.
You had my back.
I did.
Could it be your face I see on my computer screen? Thanks to my technology.
That story was produced by our own Rebecca Hertz. Now you gotta understand, every once in a while, Snap Judgment likes to get live, likes to get loud, and our regular contributor, Joshua Walters, is one of the world's best. Now, you might say he took things a little bit too far during this recent performance. I don't disagree, but there is something not right about this, brother. But do not call me about it. Call him. Joshua Walters.
I'd like to do a quick poem to someone very special, just to break up the beatbox magic for you. This is to someone very special in my life, and I could not do it without her. I'm addicted to you. I need you every day. I stare at you for 6 hours, just trying to make sense of it all. But computer! I remember when it was good. Back in the days, all I needed was your 60 gig hard drive. I come in with my floppy disk. And at first I was like, whoa! Maybe we can get some virus protection? It's a dangerous world out there. I remember you used to upload quick, download quick. Now you won't even let me stick my F drive in your USB. And I know you come from a family that's PC. You make me want to go play for the other team. Get myself a Mac. Once you go Mac, you never go back. And that's not how I thought when I first met you 5 years ago. You used to be so small and so fast. But compared to the models coming out now, you're just a slow-ass piece of plastic. I hate you so much. I want you to stop thinking so hard and just love me. I'm trying to pull the plug on this relationship, but I can't live without you. Girl, why don't you come over here? Sit on my lap. Unfold yourself. Girl, your bottom is so warm. Girl, I remember you used to be a Hotmail and now you my Gmail. Girl, whose space is this? This is my space! Oh, girl, now I'm tapping on your keys. Don't make me hit the caps lock now. Girl, I'm about to hit your backspace. Semicolon, colon. Semicolon, colon. Open parentheses. Close parentheses. Comma, 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 comma. Comma, 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 backslash, 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 forward slash, backslash, backslash, number four, money sign, number one, exclamation point, control, alt, delete, escape key, and I'm out. That was my poem for y'alls. Next to the mic.
That was Joshua Walters. Joshua Walters. Joshua Walters has been banned from the Snap Judgment Computer Network. Please do not bring your laptop into our system. Cease and desist any malfeasance. Thank you very much. Up next, I get to tell a story of my own, a family story. That's right, a family story. Get ready. Snap Judgment. Okay, before I begin this story, you've got to understand, I don't have any problems with Jesus. None. No problems at all. What I do have is a problem with my sister and her friends. See, I was at home for a visit, and my sister asked me to go to her church for a Bible study. I was only there for a short while, and I couldn't make it. And she called upset. I'm sorry, baby. We'll hook it up next time, all right? All right. So I left Michigan and went back home to California. And I got an email.
You've got mail.
From someone I didn't know telling me they were worried about me and I need to come to church. Said it's time for me to get right with my Lord. What? Got another one and said, your sinning ways will find you out. And I'm like, who is this? And I started checking out these emails and there were lots and lots of people in the CC line. People I didn't know except for one. My sister.
You've got mail.
And I got it. It was her people emailing me and whatever. I didn't care because I was so happy. See, I just met this wonderful woman and things were going great. She was planning to take me back home to her parents' house for Christmas. This was the one I was going to make my wife. So nothing could bring me down. Another email. Jesus doesn't like the way you're living. Another email said, Jesus needs to see you at the church this Wednesday night. What? I live in California, man. Your church is in Michigan. Jesus thought you needed to know that it's really hot in hell.
Now, I'm starting to get upset. And I get this one right here. It takes a real man to see his soul. Maybe you're not a real man. And they questioned my masculinity, and I still didn't say nothing. I wanted to, but I just held my tongue. I was boiling, and then they said another. It said simply, Jesus loves you. It was a straw that broke the camel's back. I wrote a strongly worded note to my sister and everyone on her email mafia list, telling them I didn't appreciate them telling me what to do, putting words in the Lord's mouth, and condemning me to hell. And if I do go to hell, I'm going to see each and every one of them there. So don't you ever write this crap to me again. Got it? Understand? Reply all. Push. And yeah, it felt good. When I looked, though, at the list of names the reply went to, I didn't see my sister. I checked a little bit further, and I saw a name I thought maybe I should recognize. I wasn't sure. This might be a problem. No, wait a minute. I called my girlfriend. Baby, what's your mother's first name? Her name's Harriet. Why? Nothing got to go. Thanks. I felt my world collapsing on itself. All those people. I knew I just had a few seconds, and the ramifications of my actions would extract their toll, and there had to be a way out. And maybe there was a way out. A little white lie. I got on the email and wrote into the headline, Virus alert! !! Virus alert! Do not open anything by Glenn Washington. Sin! All emails by Glenn Washington are corrupted. Do not open. Sin. Opening emails by Glenn Washington will destroy your computer. Send. And then I saw it. Other people getting into the act. Do not open emails from Glenn. Contaminated. Emails from Glenn Washington. Delete. Harriet herself got into the act. Glenn's emails are bad. Do not open. It was working. And it worked. Word got out to everybody. Everybody was safe. Then I got a call from my girlfriend. Why did you send a virus to my mother, my father, my relatives, my kindergarten class, my church pastor, everyone I've ever known from Pennsylvania? Well, you know, baby, what with these computers, you got to be careful. These things don't work right. It's all that technology, you know, that technology, baby. And she said, I know all about your little technology. Oh, no. Your people know, don't they? Are they mad? They can't wait to meet you in person. It turns out, though, that some of Jesus' followers really can turn the other cheek.
As far as the eye could see, as deep as the heart could be, such an impossibility.
As hard as it might be to believe, that is the end of a full hour of snap judgment. A lot of what happened on this show might be called illegal. My lips are sealed. You can't act, they can put me in the chair. They can give me the drugs. I'm not telling where the stories came from. Mark, would you please put up some added security?
Thank you. Thank you for that added security on the side.
Ha ha ha.
Snap Judgment was produced by myself, but never, ever alone. Would you please, please join me in giving it up? A warm round of Snap Judgment love to the uber producer, Mr. Mark Ristich. The god of war and radio, Mr. Roman Mars, and you can't bowl over 75? That's not very good. You better practice, because our own Rebecca Megahertz gets a 200 each and every time. Most Steph, Miss Stephanie Fu. How do you do, Miss Stephanie Fu? Rita Daniels, her of the fly, funky boots. If you want to stay in her good graces, you better leave her boots alone. Half man, half machine, the Snappinator, Mr. Will Urbina. In fact, this is no joke. Go to the Snap Judgment website and check out this boy's hack. It's called a Macintosh, a Hackintosh. You got to see it to believe it. This film that he made, that's Will Urbina. DJ Smooth Grooves keeps mixing them ones and twos. And, you know, Snap Judgment was inspired by Youth Speaks because the next generation can speak for itself. YouthSpeaks.org. And if you happen to see the Corporation for Public Broadcasting hanging out on the stoop with them bad kids saying stuff that shouldn't be said, please just go ahead, grab them by the ear, tell them you don't appreciate this type of behavior, and it better stop right now before somebody has to get told what was seen if they get your drift. That's right. Be stern. Tough love. They'll thank you for it later. Big hugs to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And if you desire to take the public and to put that public into some public media, look no further than the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org. And even though this is not the news, in fact, you could get sucked into your computer like that guy on Tron and battle the evil queen CPU and her micro minions, regain access to the motherboard, look in the mirror, and see your own father's face staring back at you, and still not be as far away from the news as this is. This is NPR. The producer of this very podcast, listening, judging, and condemning all she hears out of my mouth right now, is Snap Judgment's own podcast producer, Rita Daniels.